Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week marks 12 years since the death of my teacher, mentor, and friend, William Pierce. It's a time to reflect on his legacy and our responsibility. This program is partly based on my 2013 appreciation of Dr. Pierce, Tomorrow's Religion, which I composed before restarting American Dissident Voices, and which, in updated form, deserves to be a part of the ADV legacy. In today's program, I will be contrasting Dr. Pierce's hard way, his cosmotheist way of building a new white community, with the quick fix, issue-oriented approach of other race-based groups, who don't seek to fundamentally change society's basic assumptions and beliefs. William Luther Pierce, even a dozen years after his death, has proven impossible to ignore. Despite his decade-long absence, he is inspiring an ever-growing number of white men and women who are rediscovering his ideas, talking about them, republishing his works, and even beginning new institutions that will embody his ideals. The newly revived National Alliance, and this radio program among them. William Pierce transformed the white resistance, turning us away from hopelessly outdated and sterile conservatism, away from the insanity of preserving an old order which didn't even exist anymore, away from the madness of reforming an enemy-designed system, away from the delusion that we, with our race's ever-dwindling percentage of an ever more befuddled population, can vote our way out of extinction, and turning us toward secession, revolution, and an entirely new society. The Jewish power structure and its adjuncts, the media and governmental establishments of the West, still invoke his name. Though he was a gentle man, many are the books and articles issued by the controlled media which still paint him as a kind of terrorist mastermind whose influence apparently transcends even the grave. Merely mentioning the author of The Turner Diaries and Hunter, novels in which the secret police and other collaborators with our race's enemies receive swift and certain justice, is enough to stir fear and open wallets among the wealthy donors to Jewish organizations. And corrupt prosecutors and those who pay them off and whisper in their ears still find it profitable to brandish a link between an accused party and the terrible Pierce, who dared to dream of a world cleansed of their kind. But as stirring as was his clarion call to racial loyalty, as striking as was his ability to synthesize and explain complex ideas, as impressive as was his talent for organizing independent thinking whites, and as great as was his love for his people and his dedication to their future, it is not for these things that he will primarily be remembered. I believe that William L. Pierce will be known, beyond all his other accomplishments, as the founder of a new religion. And not just a religion, but the religion of the future. A religion which will supplant all others. Cosmotheism will prevail because it is the inevitable truth toward which all other streams of knowledge are converging. And cosmotheism will prevail because it will be the religion of a new people who, as a result of following its precepts, will branch off from the rest of humanity, even from the race from which they sprang, and form a new race, ultimately a new species, compared to which the others will be but unconscious beings. The religious ideas of the left-behind races, including those of the unconscious whites, will mean as little to higher men as the hallelujahs of black preachers or the chatterings of hamsters mean to us. Like other religions, cosmotheism posits certain fundamental truths about the nature of the universe and our purpose in it. But Unlike the Semitic religions and many others, cosmotheism has no truck with revelation or infallible, immutable scriptures before which all must bow. No. Our reason and our everyday and scientific observations of the universe, far from being denied, are regarded as essential and are embraced, for it is only by understanding what is, to the maximum extent possible, that we can understand who we are and what we must do. A revealed religion says to us essentially that there is a perfect, hitherto unknown, and secret knowledge, God's knowledge, of reality, of life, and of our purpose on earth. And this secret knowledge has been revealed to a select few who have written it down to save or guide all those who will accept and follow it. This knowledge and the moral commands derived from it are perfect and unchangeable. They are static. Any new doctrine, any fact, any idea which contradicts the holy revelations is evil and must be rejected. Not only are the scriptures of revealed religions static, so also is the putative universe they claim to know. In contrast, cosmotheism is a natural religion. Cosmotheists do not deny reality. Cosmotheists do not reject what objective science has uncovered because it contradicts something a goat herder or rabbi wrote down a few centuries ago. Nor do we reject newly discovered facts when we would be required to revise our own beliefs as a result of accepting them. Cosmotheists do not deny what is in front of their eyes, and they do not suppress or twist their own reason. And cosmotheists know that the idea of a static, unchangeable universe is a childish illusion. Cosmotheists see, acknowledge, and embrace the fact that we are evolving, that all life is evolving, and that the universe as a whole is evolving, as it always has since its unknowable beginning, and as it always will be until the final conflict of life with entropy is upon us. In fact, cosmotheists acknowledge that an understanding of ourselves and other living beings is impossible without accepting and understanding evolution. The past and present of that evolution are revealed to us not on ancient parchments or miraculous golden plates, but through the means of our senses and through the rigorous logical and empirical tests our best minds have devised to approach more closely with each passing year a knowledge of what is. The science writer, Don Kaiser, shows a mature understanding, almost a cosmotheist understanding, of the ever-evolving, non-static nature of life when he writes in his Life is Evolution that, quote, "The sole characteristic that ultimately distinguishes living from non-living matter is classical Darwinian evolution. Life is simply matter that evolves. Evolution is the sole feature that differentiates living matter from non-living matter. Given the fact that all life forms die, how do they persist through time and changing environments? Every environment harboring life forms must change simply because of their existence. So evolution is the only way life forms can persist through time. Not only did Charles Darwin discover what makes life possible despite the fact that all life forms eventually die, he unwittingly discovered the sole feature that distinguishes living from non-living matter. Charles Darwin defined life. Life is evolution." Close quote. To the cosmotheist, nature is God, and science, logic, observation, reason, and the deepest stirrings of our race soul are the means of apprehending God, not the ravings of ancient Semitic cutthroats, carpet dealers, and con men, or the poetry and verses they stole from their more accomplished neighbors. mathematics, physics, and genetics are the real words of God. Mathematical principles may be misunderstood for a time, but they cannot be faked, as Scripture can, nor for long can they be maliciously revised for political advantage, and they are eminently verifiable. So also with the laws of evolution and biology, physics, and cosmology. Cosmotheism asserts that we are matter and energy become conscious, and more than that, we are the universe become conscious, that we are nature become conscious of itself, and all that that implies. It further shows us that we have reached a radically new stage in the evolution of the universe, as significant, perhaps, as the evolution of non-living matter into living beings, as significant as the first rise of consciousness itself, as significant as the faltering steps of the first amphibians on the surface of the earth. This new stage has come only recently, when European man first grasped the concept of evolution and discovered the principles of genetics and heredity. It is the stage of conscious evolution, of the ability of living beings to direct and vastly accelerate the future course of their own evolution. From unconscious matter to the first stirrings of consciousness in primitive animals, from the partial consciousness of the higher animals and in lower man, to the ever-increasing consciousness of European man encompassing his discovery of the principles of science, genetics, and evolution itself, to the infinite consciousness that is possible for us as we make the choice to follow the upward path of conscious evolution. That is the path of cosmotheism. And that is the path the life force must inevitably take if life is to extend beyond the paltry lifespan of our birth planet. To the best of my knowledge, it was the ABC television affiliate in Washington, D.C., WJLA, which first made the claim in 1987 that cosmotheism was nothing but a quote-unquote tax dodge. The accusation was picked up more recently by Mark Pitcavage of the Southern Poverty Law Center, an anti-white Jewish group. Note well, who is trying to prevent us from seizing the reins of our own evolutionary destiny? Precisely who it is who would, as a friend of mine puts it, block us from climbing the genetic spiral staircase of light toward the universal purpose of the cosmos. Robert S. Griffin, in his biography of Dr. Pierce, The Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds, gives insight into George Bernard Shaw's play, Man and Superman, its central character, Don Juan, and its influence on cosmotheism, which Dr. Pierce acknowledged. Quote, as Don Juan speaks of it, life is an entity unto itself, a separate being of sorts. According to Don Juan, life, or the life force, this entity, this being, has monumentally important purposes. To become aware of itself and understand itself, and to realize itself, that is to say, become the finest version of what it truly is. He refers to life's continual effort not only to maintain itself, but to achieve higher and higher organization and completer self-consciousness. Don Juan refers to the full achievement of these ends as the attainment of Godhead. As Don Juan sees it, in all likelihood, Godhead won't come without a mighty struggle. Life faces extremely formidable enemies, the forces of death and degeneration. Life's central impulse is to move toward the creation of a superior kind of human being, Don Juan asserts. That is what life at its core is about. Here Don Juan is expressing an evolutionary, Darwinian idea, the concept of man evolving into something higher, more advanced than he is now. Life, as Don Juan perceives it, is the force that seeks to bring about higher and higher individuals, the ideal individual being, omnipotent, omniscient, infallible, and withal, completely, unilludedly, self-conscious. In short, a god. Don Juan brings race into it, as he affirms, the great central purpose of breeding the race, I, breeding it to heights now deemed superhuman, that purpose which is now hidden in a mephistic cloud of love and romance and prudery and fastidiousness, will break through into clear sunlight. Close quote. As I said in my introduction to the online version of the first cosmotheist publication, Dr. Pierce's The Path, by the standards of a more childish and innocent time, Dr. Pierce might be adjudged an atheist, and by those who call themselves atheists today, the narrow egoists of the Rand cult and its derivatives, and the sentimental Christians without Christ who constitute the secular humanist and Marxian reformations of the gospel, he could not even be understood, so limited is their vision. In the drama of the evolution of life from non-living matter and of higher and more conscious beings from lower forms of life, William Pierce sees a path of purpose and destiny for us. That path is the path of conscious evolution. To the earnest and intelligent seeker after truth and meaning, and there are many such today among the young men and women of our race, dissatisfied with conventional religion and materialist ideologies like capitalism and communism, finding cosmotheism is like finding an oasis in Death Valley, or Epictetus in the midst of Bedlam. For our best young people, for whom the truths of biology and physics speak 10,000 times louder than any dusty holy book, the path delineated by cosmotheism is almost self-evident. And cosmotheism is a fit religion for heroes. Its truths provide the only possible moral framework for doing what must be done to claim white living space and build a new society. A scholar of my acquaintance once expressed it well, quote, "The multiple gene patterns that bring creativity, curiosity, exploration, and imagination into being are intensified in people of European blood. All history testifies to that fact. But we must kick down the worm-eaten rotting door of the old ethno-religious Judeo-Christian European Semite hybrid symbiosis if we are ever to cross over to conscious evolution and seize the reins of our own evolutionary destiny and fulfill the meaning and purpose of life and the cosmos." Close quote. The 21st century, he says, will be deeply influenced by cosmotheism and will be the century of the human genetic revolution and the singularity that marks our first step beyond man. Cosmotheism teaches, and I believe, that we have no greater moral duty than to ensure that the race most fit, by its high intelligence and unique creativity, to ascend to conscious evolution and beyond, the race which can advance that evolution both farthest and soonest, and is thus more likely to avoid devolution, dead ends, cosmic catastrophe, and a lifeless universe, the race which discovered the evolutionary and cosmotheist principles, our race, the white race, is the one which takes that step. One fault, admitted by William Pierce, was his occasional temptation to find a quick fix to our people's problems, to build up the alliance's numbers by welcoming those with a very incomplete understanding of our plight and our purpose, and those with powerful attachments to fundamentally opposed ideologies, like Christianity, into our ranks. In the early years of his political efforts, he thought a populist appeal based on current issues of the day might have brought enough white Americans to his side to succeed. In those days, those issues might have been school busing for racial integration or communist infiltration of our campuses. Today's populist issues might include Obama's subversive background, the current healthcare scam, and our uncontrolled border. And indeed, Dr. Pierce did talk about such issues, even in his later years, and we do still talk about such issues today. But his acknowledged mistake was in thinking that bringing together people who agreed with us on such issues was enough to build our organization and usher in the new world we dream of. Even bringing together those whites who agree with us that our race deserves to survive is not enough. More than once in his career, Dr. Pierce tried a populist, issue-oriented, big tent approach. He accepted as associates and even leaders individualists whose main problem with multiracialism was that it interfered with their money-making and free enjoyment of life. And he accepted Christians whose main problem with the Jewish agenda was that it contradicted Scripture, or who believed that our race were the true Hebrews and that the Old Testament was written for us. And he found that giving responsible leadership positions to those whose deepest allegiance is to individualism or to the Bible is a formula for disaster. Not only do such people revert to the arms of those other communities, abandoning the alliance when the going gets tough, but they influence others within our community, diverting their path and clouding their understanding of who we are and what we want. In his last years, William Pierce entertained the hope that the purchase of resistance records could bring an influx of new blood into the alliance, and that the alliance could influence the white power music scene into becoming something more than an excuse for petty violence, drunkenness, and visceral dislike of non-whites. This, too, verged on a quick fix. Dr. Pierce's condemnation of the antisocial tendencies in that scene wasn't enough to prevent the scene from influencing the alliance much more than the alliance influenced the scene. And it set the stage for the conversion of the alliance into a big tent pro-white organization when Dr. Pierce died. The National Alliance changed dramatically. It went from being a highly competent elite group dedicated to bringing about a revolution in philosophy and religion and in the fundamental basis of society, dedicated to bringing about an entirely new stage in human evolution, and instead became at best a poorly run group of well-meaning incompetents whose only unifying principle was a vague idea that white is right. And since the supply of such groups vastly exceeds the demand, membership collapsed. Soon the organization existed in name only, and eventually ceased to exist at all. But the real National Alliance never disappeared. The men and women with a fire in their souls, with a deep understanding of who we are and what must be, never lost faith. We are rebuilding now, without compromise, with no interest whatever in the quick fix or the big tent. We base our actions on a strict adherence to fundamental principles and our understanding of our race's mission in the universe. Our hard way is the only way forward. And in the final analysis, I do not believe our hard way will always be quite as hard as it seems now. There are millions of men and women of our race who know that something is wrong, that our people deserve to survive, who know that the philosophies of liberalism and fundamentalism are both horribly wrong. They love nature and abhor its destruction. They know science and know at least the basics of our ever-evolving universe. They are social and community-minded. They are the opposite of antisocial. These people are ready for cosmotheism. Our new religion has the potential to catch fire like no religion in history. For the first time, a substantial portion of our people have reached a stage of knowledge and consciousness sufficient to understand our truth, to grasp the real meaning of our lives and of the universe. If you are one of us, you know who you are. Join your hands with ours and build that new world in the only possible way it can be built. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the reconstituted National Alliance membership organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal. And equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.